Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers, helping farm families succeed for 100 years.
From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 26th day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. We'll take a look at last weekend's Herb Day held here in Urbana-Champaign. About 300 folks came to celebrate herbs and their explosion of taste. More on that. And we'll also discuss the cash grain market and take a look at the ethanol and agricultural energies, that with Dan O'Brien. He's at K-State University out in Kansas. It all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's what the numbers look like in Chicago as they finished up on this Tuesday afternoon. Corn futures, March contract at 369 and a quarter, half lower. The May contract down a quarter at 374 and a half. In July, settlement price, $3.79 and three quarters down a quarter. December, a penny lower at 391 and a half. Soy complex, March beans, four lower at the end of the day, 876 and a half. The settlement price, the May at 878 and a half, down three and a quarter. July, $8.84, two and three quarters lower. And the September beans, $8.85, down two and a half. November, down two and a quarter, $8.87 and a half. Bean meal in the March, down $2.60 at $269.90. The bean oil at $30.74, up 30 cents. Wheat futures, March contract, soft red, $4.84 and a half, three quarters, $4.84 and a half. Rather, 484 and three quarters, up three and a quarter. July at 890, rather 495 and a half, up three and a quarter. And July hard red at $4.97 and a half, up two and three quarters of a cent. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby February at 132.70, actually still trading, $1.27 and a half cents higher. April at 132.95, up 72 and a half cents. And January feeders at 160.97 and a half, up 75 cents. The March there at $158.72 and a half, 95 cents higher. Lean hogs for the day, 400 pounds, $64.37 and a half cents, up 85 cents in the February. April up 92 and a half at $69.70. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. The address is willag.org.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Checking in on some of the outside markets at this hour. Crude oil trading $31.40 a barrel, is $1.06 higher. Ethanol futures at $1.39.5, down 0.2 of a cent. The wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB at $1.04.9 is 1.9 higher. And heating oil is up 3.2 of a cent. That's diesel fuel at 96.7 of a cent per gallon. Natural gas at $2.17.7 is 1.9 higher. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 16,055, up about 245 points. The U.S. dollar trading 99.13. That's down 0.276. And gold futures for the afternoon at $1,122.50 for a troy ounce, up $17.25. Here's what the weather forecast says the weather will look like for this evening. Mostly cloudy, a low of 21 degrees on a west-northwest wind at 9 to 14, gusting to 20 miles an hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a high of 33, west-northwest winds at 7 to 10. Tomorrow evening, partly cloudy with a low of 26. We'll turn the winds to the south-southwest by then at 9 to 16. Do they bring us warmer temperatures on Thursday? You bet. 40 degrees for the high under partly sunny skies. West winds at 11 to 14, gusting to 21. Thursday night will drop to 26. The winds will turn to the west-northwest, and on Friday, partly sunny skies and a 43-degree top. West-northwest winds at 6 to 13 miles an hour, and then they'll turn to the south in the afternoon. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on the 26th day of January. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Looks like we're going to get warmer temperatures by the end of the week. A lot of the snow has already melted in our area. That should take care of the end of it, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that that was one of the things that helped the wheat market a little bit today was we are taking away the snow cover and the safety blanket for that. So that was one of the things that was a little bit advantageous there. We're also talking about that Russia may put a tariff on their wheat that wouldn't be for 30 days now because they have to publish for 30 days before they put it on. But that did put a little bit of maybe pulling some of the Russian wheat off the world market.
That put a little pop into the wheat market. However, neither corn nor soybeans could manage to gain at the end of the day. Just the weight of the marketplace and all of the grain and oil seeds that are around in the United States and across the planet.
Yeah, that sure is one of the big reasons, Todd. We did see a little pop at times today out of the crude oil holding above $30. That's been sort of a bellwether mark there for them to get back above and stay above there. We got a little bit of talk out of Russia and some of the OPEC countries talking about maybe cutting their production. We don't know that that's really going to happen, but that did pop into things also. So, but we did see Brazil selling some beans overnight for March delivery to China, and they did that about 43 cents a bushel under what the U.S. offers were at.
What kind of local cash bids do you have at this time and expectations?
You know, we're about 20 over at the ethanol plants for corn over here right now. That way, the beans, both closer to base or to even basis on those. We are very much the farmers over here looking just like everybody for $4 corn and $9 beans, and we're just not there. And it's not seen much cash movement in our area. An individual was just in, and his nephew works for the railroad, and basically says they did some pretty heavy layoffs because they have not been shipping much freight lately.
All right. Anything else that we ought to take up before I let you go for the afternoon?
You know, there's just a little concern about the subsoil moisture in Argentina, but it looks like timely rains are going to fall.
Okay. Thanks so much, Wayne.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Be sure to visit our website, willag.org. We post all kinds of fun things there, and within, an hour or so, I'll put up a brand new little video from the Herb Day that took place on Saturday here in Urbana, sponsored by University of Illinois Extension. In fact, you'll hear the audio from that story coming up on the Closing Market Report in just a few minutes. The video is a whole lot more fun, so you can drop by and see that at willag.org. In today's agricultural news, Canada seems unsure about ratifying the TPP. The 12 member nations included in the Trans-Pacific Partnership will sign the trade deal next week in what Canadian officials call a technical step. While Canada will sign the trade pact, Canada's trade minister said this week the country's government has not decided yet whether or not to formally ratify the agreement. The problem for Canada is that the former government negotiated the trade deal, representing a separate political party than what's in office today. Well, USDA's January livestock, dairy, and poultry outlook suggests a slow ramp-up of live hog imports into the United States. Meeting Place says that's because the U.S. repealed its mandatory country of origin labeling law back in December. Since Congress repealed COOL, U.S. pork processors do not have to differentiate between U.S. and Canadian hogs. A recent report shows imports of Canadian live hogs are expected to increase 9% this year to 6.2 million head. Well, while equipment sales are down, DTN is saying some farm machinery dealers are turning to leasing equipment to fill those sales gaps. Dealership inventories of new equipment remains high, with 30% of the dealers reporting used inventory too high. Prices for used tractors in the same month dropped 8%. That would have been November. Creighton University's Aaron Goss, who surveys the Midwest economy, notes that the current year-end machinery sales and recent farm equipment sales survey landed at 7 on a 100-point scale, down from last year's 29.5. While his survey does not include leasing, he told DTN, "I can't say it will bankrupt them, but the direction is definitely going the wrong way." Well, commodity traders are saying Chinese corn and corn substitute imports may drop by 50% this year. Speaking of bad news, following a record volume of imports last year, Pro Farmers First Thing today reported the drop was expected for multiple reasons. First, China's year-long investigation into U.S. dried distillers' grains imports is expected to drastically curb the country's purchases. And secondly, China plans to reform its state corn purchasing price so that the market determines domestic corn price. This is aimed at curbing both its imports and large state reserves. Well, the Food Inspection Service says Whole Foods is recalling more than 70,000 pounds of pepperoni pizza products due to misbranding. The Whole Foods pizza products were recalled because the product is labeled as containing uncured beef pepperoni. However, the pizzas contain uncured pork pepperoni, which is not declared on the product label. And finally today, the Agricultural Resource Service, or ARS, is organizing a national bee gene bank as part of the agency's response to ongoing problems facing the country's beekeepers. The gene bank will be located in Fort Collins, Colorado, and ARS says the gene bank will help preserve the genetic diversity of honeybees, especially for traits such as resistance to pests or diseases and pollination efficiency. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Coming up next, we'll explore last weekend's U of I Extension Herb Day. On a bright, snowy Saturday in Urbana, Illinois, about 300 herb enthusiasts gathered for the 17th time. Herb Day is a kind of party led by Chuck Voigt. He just retired from University of Illinois Extension. He's always smiling and singing. Chuck invites his friends to come to the party and then gets people to pay to see them, but for oh so much more.
I like to think it's knowledge that's presented in a way that is so much fun. It's like you're going to school, but you don't know it because you're just having such a good time. That's been the goal.
This year, Chuck invited culinary herbalist Susan Belsinger to heat things up.
So take it away and demonstrate what you're going to do.
I'll call you when I need you.
She writes books and columns and blogs about food and herbs.
Okay, I'm going to teach them all about chili peppers. I'm going to tell them about growing and harvesting chili peppers, and I'm going to teach them about fresh versus dried, and I'm going to make two recipes, two of my most favorite recipes. One's a southwestern black bean and sour cream chipotle dip, and then the other one's an escabeche, which is sort of like a cabbage slaw with hot chili peppers and seasonings of the Southwest.
It's a mesmerizing day with gardeners and aspiring chefs alike just waiting for the next nugget to write down. Sue Arnold's from Indianapolis.
Very practical, useful herbal things. I'm a diehard herby person. I want to learn more. Always learn more. And you can here.
Because it's such a great outreach to people. It gives them such a positive experience and a very, very positive interaction with the university people and with people that I bring in. So it just shows, you know, my department, you know, my college and the whole university in I think the most positive light imaginable.
It is the land grant experience, that part of the mission that expects practical knowledge to be passed on to the people so that they might use it for pleasure and commerce. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Don't forget to visit our website. The address is WILLAG.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, including the story you just listened to, although I'll put that up so that it is up as a video story, and it's kind of interesting to watch Chuck Voigt and Susan Belsinger and company all in action. Again, that's at WILLAG.org. You can find it there anytime you'd like. And we'll have that video posted there within, I don't know, the hour or so. So go back and visit that one. You can always pick up all of our agricultural programming there, too, from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. Again, that's WILLAG.org. Let's turn our attention now to the agricultural energy markets. Dan O'Brien joins us from Kansas State. He is not in his normal haunt today, but actually I think you're in Wichita. What are you doing there?
Well, we've got a risk-assessed marketing workshop trying to help people combine crop insurance and grain marketing tools in to make a profit this year. And that's a challenge given the price of it.
So what's your kind of bottom? I'm interested. We'll talk about the energies, but what's your bottom line to them as you talk to them? Because you're in an area where they're, well, I guess you're, are you, do, is your cash price really high where you're at still?
Well,
relatively speaking, I mean,
if we're talking about corn and Southwest Kansas, yeah, we're $4 or above, but in these other non-central feeding areas, unless you're right by an ethanol plant, for more like 325 to 330, something like that, if not lower, for cash. So pretty challenging. Our break-evens are about a dollar above that. So that's a challenging year right now.
Are you working mostly today with wheat producers then?
Wheat, and yeah, but we're talking about wheat, corn, and soybeans in these type of workshop settings.
And again, what's your kind of bottom line for them as to marketing and crop insurance for the coming year?
Well, key issue is if we do get into the spring and get some uncertainty driven higher prices to either hedge or forward contract or buy put options, then we want to make sure we have adequate crop insurance coverage so that we're not quote overextended or out there at risk on the bushels that we might forward to mix. That really is a lot of the educational aspect that we're working with today.
Here in the state of Illinois, I think average crop insurance is coverage is 75% and above. How about in Kansas?
We've gone to that. It used to be 65, 70, and now, given the mandated necessity of not being caught short financially, we've seen ourselves move up to that 75, even sometimes even more, although it's not the best quote financial deal, but still, you know, buying that extra coverage up at even higher levels accomplishes something financial.
And which are they normally buying RP?
Yes. Well, the names keep changing, of course. But what we used to call RP with, you know, if we have it available to have a planting price and then a harvest price, really helps us cover both the yield and the price risks together. So we hope that maintains the changes that could come in the future in crop insurance.
Yeah, so lockstep here with Gary Schnittke from the University of Illinois, who says look forward to your crop insurance, but don't use it as a place to save cost in the coming year. Now turn your attention to ethanol and biodiesel. You put together some programming for Kansas State today. Tell me about the situation for that marketplace.
Overall, pretty challenging. You know, right now, ethanol prices are above our bob prices, about 120. So ethanol futures about 129% of our bob. It's a kind of symptomatic of not that ethanol is doing great, but gasoline is doing so poorly. When you plug numbers into plant profitability estimates, at least by our numbers, we're losing about 19 cents a gallon in some of those Iowa Midwest plants. Pretty challenging for ethanol and for biodiesel, where it breaks even to slight loss. Really not as bad on the biodiesel side as we are in the ethanol. And it's kind of a race to the bottom, you know, in terms of the cost of corn versus the cost of ethanol. And for a while, we were doing actually better when we had ethanol holding up a little bit better than corn, but now that ethanol is also weakening, we're seeing losses. So I hope this doesn't continue for the sake of the ethanol plants and for corn demand, but you do wonder where this might go as we head off into summer.
And because of the mandates, is there any reason to believe that the oil companies will end up having to increase their bids for ethanol in order to make sure the plants continue to run?
Well, that's in order to ensure that the plants continue to run, that is the best thing that corn has had going for it all throughout this RFS time frame, all from 2006 on, has been that we have a mandated 9 or 10% of the fuel that has to be put. And actually, Todd, maybe the best thing for us is to get out in the summertime, see gasoline demand increase all that much more, and have a demand pull coming back through that the gasoline distribution system at the retail level that pulls mandated ethanol into all those blends. And I think from a corn producer's point of view, that's probably what we're hoping for.
However, what do the numbers tell you at this point about usage of gasoline in the United States?
Well, not doing very good. And isn't that surprising? We've got the cheapest gasoline in the last 1 or 2 decades, and yet we're struggling in terms of overall usage. So, it's not the summer driving season yet. We'll see what happens, I guess, once we head off into the spring and see what goes on there.
Are you concerned about DDGs and the export of those, or the lack of exports that might be coming because of China's switch, I suppose, to bean meal for two reasons. One, they've been looking at DDGs, GMO in the background on that one, and then bean meal is just a better product and it's cheap on the world marketplace.
Those macro issues are absolutely in play. But when you do see what's happened in terms of distillers' grain prices, say looking at the Nebraska price series, we've actually took a step up about 1/3 of the way through November and have been trending sideways to higher. So I don't doubt that what you're talking about actually is no doubt an issue. But maybe we're whistling in the graveyard. I'm not sure, Todd, but we've seen at least a steady and slight uptrend in distillers' grains prices of late. And in the longer run, yeah, what happens overseas with China and their seed grain usage policies and all that, sure a concern across the whole seed grain sector. But for now, we have seen at least, we're not falling out of bed in terms of DDG prices. In fact, a trend sideways to higher.
And finally, your assessment of the biofuels industry for soy diesel.
For soy diesel, it's been kind of an industry, if I understand it right, that where we've had more than enough capacity to produce what's demanded so far, but at least, and we've kind of bounced around with just so-so profitability at best. Well, here within the last, by our January numbers, we're at about break-even. So if you're about break-even in those plants and they have if biodiesel's part of kind of a co-product with everything else going on there, well, they do keep going with it. So it's kind of a so-so sideways type of a view.
Hey, thanks so much. That, of course, is Dan O'Brien. He's with K-State. Back in 2 minutes.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
It's National Popcorn Day. It's also National Peanut Brittle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1831, Heinrich Anton de Bary was born, a German botanist. He is considered a founder of modern plant pathology for his roles of fungi and other agents in causing plant diseases. In 1865, he proved that the life cycle of wheat rust involves two hosts, wheat and barberry. In 1838, the first state temperance law was passed in Tennessee. In 1861, Samuel Slocum died. He invented a machine to make pins with solid heads and a machine for sticking the pins in a paper holder for sale. In 1926, Francis Boyd was born, an American geologist. His studies on the origins of volcanic rocks contributed to the understanding of the formation of the Earth. And in 1932, William Wrigley Jr. died. He started out as a traveling salesman at the age of 13, selling soap for his father's company. He had a series of sales jobs, one of which gave chewing gum as a premium. Customers liked the gum better than the product, so he was soon marketing his own gum, Juicy Fruit, in 1893, and later that year, Wrigley's Spearmint. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support comes from Country Financial, now through March hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois. Topics include updates to both the federal crop insurance program and the farm bill, and at most locations, how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon, the 26th day of January. Don Day is here, as usual, to take a look at the weather forecast. Don, thanks for being with us. Start with digging out on the East Coast, expectations there, maybe some of the temperatures here in the Midwest, and then we'll turn our attention to the growing conditions in South America.
Yeah, there is going to be a couple of other systems moving through the Great Lakes Midwest and the East Coast here over the course of the next 5 or 6 days or so, but nothing that is remotely close to what came in over the weekend along the eastern seaboard. But it will be a pattern through Saturday that's going to be pretty chilly, as the cold air from Canada will have easy access into the Midwest. So expect at least through Friday and into Saturday morning still some chilly temperatures, and then a bit of a warm-up is coming this weekend and into the early portions of the next week for the Midwest and the East.
Oh, warm-up sounds nice. I saw that last week when the National Weather Service put out its longer-term forecast. What'd you think of those, and do you have ideas for the very earliest parts of the growing season here in the United States?
Too early to talk about the growing season, although I will say that I think the weather is going to be much more stormy and active than some of the National Weather Service forecasts have led us to believe. And we've got two big things coming up, Todd, that will impact the next several weeks. First of all, we are just really seeing the impacts of El Nino in terms of it producing Pacific storms that can go across the country causing problems, much like what we saw this past weekend. There's another thing coming, which you don't hear a lot about. It's called a stratospheric warming, and this happens two or three times a winter, some stronger than others. It's basically high in the reaches of the high latitudes of the Arctic in the stratosphere. When we have warming in those higher elevations, that pushes cold air off the poles and into the United States and portions of Europe. And that could be a volatile mix where we get some shots of Canadian air and this Pacific energy. So it's going to be a roller coaster ride here over the next few weeks, coast to coast. While this does mean warmer periods, it could also be followed by colder, stormy periods as well. And this is something next week we're going to need to watch. We could have a heck of a storm come out of the Rockies and Plains and into the nation's midsection early to mid-next week.
We'll keep an eye on it and check on that with you again next week. How about South American weather for today?
Well, I tell you, it looks a lot like it was when we talked a week ago. Brazil is going to be the cooler, wetter country. The growing areas of Brazil still look at decent chances of precipitation and temperatures that are not going to be hot, while Argentina's on the flip side. While the rain prospects for Argentina are a little bit better, it still looks pretty warm down there.
Can you take me on a quick tour of the rest of the Northern Hemisphere?
Europe's weather is mirroring the United States weather in many areas. They were very mild to start the winter. Now they're turning colder and stormy, much like many areas of the Central and East United States have. And the next 10 days, they're going to see good chances of precipitation all across Europe, and that includes Russia, and it also includes the Ukraine and those areas there. At least for China, they're looking at some wintry weather as well. Pretty good chances for some snowfall and some rain. The areas that I think we'll need to watch will be India, Australia, those areas that typically in an El Nino pattern do tend to be drier, and that's certainly something we're going to be watching.
Thanks, Don. Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. That wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report.